Gosh, it disturbs me to see you, Deadpool. In fact, it usually does. 'Cause you look like my balls under that hood, Deadpool. Just thinking of it kills my buzz.
You know, normally that would have just hurt my feelings, but damn it, I've always wanted to be in a musical.
There's no man in town as reviled as you, and hell, they all wish you would die. Even though you've proven quite tricky to kill, everyone's going to try. No.
Deadpool, no one's quick as Deadpool. No one punches you right in the dick like Deadpool. For there's no man in town half as Chimichanga. Perfect.
Hello and welcome to the podcast that will break the fourth wall but will refuse to reference Chimichanga's Film Book Cast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is a man who keeps casting Josh Brolin in Marvel movies.
Mike Tricia.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing well. You're welcome for giving you Josh Brolin. That's all. How are you?
We have you to thank. People don't know about this, but you're actually a high-powered Marvel executive,
mm-hmm.
and your first order of business when hired was to cast Josh Brolin in everything.
Give me more Josh Brolin, damn it. That was my pitch, and they were like, you're hired.
Yeah, you were chomping on a cigar, smacking on a table, and being like, Josh Brolin, give it to me now.
I need pictures of the goddamn Josh Brolin.
If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then after that, we move on into our featured review. This week, we are discussing the latest film in the X-Men universe and the sequel to 2016's Deadpool. This one's directed by David Leitch. It's Deadpool 2. Now, Mike, you were looking forward to Deadpool 2 a lot, right?
Yeah, I was pretty hyped for this movie to come out. For some reason, I was really hyped for this movie.
Well, I was re-listening to our old podcast episode where we reviewed the first Deadpool recently today, and you came away from that movie loving it. Like, you were a big fan of the original Deadpool. So I'm sure Deadpool 2 was very exciting to you. And we'll talk about your emotional reactions and things thereof when we get to our featured review. But right now, let's get into some film news. All right, it's time for film news here on Film Book Cast, and it's been a couple of weeks since our last review. I think our last review was Avengers Infinity War, right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of stuff to get through, and you know, oddly, a lot of long-awaited sequels have recently been announced over the past couple of weeks. So I've ranked them in order of least excited I am to most excited I am.
For
these long-awaited sequels. So we'll start off with the one that I'm least excited for, still kind of interested in, Sylvester Stallone. Will be directing and starring in a new Rambo movie, Mike. Rambo 5, First Blood Part 6.
Sure. yeah, okay. I guess.
Yeah.
We have no more original ideas anyway, so.
I mean, at this point, like, I love Sylvester Stallone as Rocky in the Rocky movies, and they've managed to work him in a way where it makes sense for him to still be in those movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
As for Rambo, I just don't know. That makes sense anymore, you know?
Yeah.
He's a very old man at this point.
Yeah, it seems so weird. You know, I don't think I've ever seen any of the other Rambo movies. Like, I've seen Rambo.
The original. First Blood.
The First Blood, yeah, that's right. Sorry. First Blood. and I think that might be it.
Really?
And I'm, like, sort of afraid to see the other ones because First Blood is such a, like, poignant criticism of Vietnam and the treatment of veterans at that time.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, it seems, has devolved into just action movies.
Oh, yeah, as soon as First Blood Part 2 came out, they became the complete opposite of First Blood. They were like jingoistic, insane, rah-rah America patriotism. Fuck yeah, we're winning Vietnam again. And like,
yeah,
like we're going back to Vietnam. We're going to win it this time. Actually, okay, so I will say First Blood Part 2 is great. Okay, I'm not going to say great, but it's...
For what it is,
it's a blast. It's a really fun movie. It's the polar opposite of First Blood. It does everything that movie... everything that movie's against, this movie is for.
Right.
You know? But it is a lot of fun. And then there's Rambo 3 and Rambo from 2008.
Right.
I've actually never seen either of those movies. I've only seen the first two. Rambo, but I've heard they kind of get worse and worse from... First Blood Part 2. Rambo 5, I don't know, especially with Sylvester Stallone, the way he is now, he is a Republican. individual. And I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like in the current environment, I don't need a movie that goes into the trappings that First Blood Part 2 does. You know what I mean?
Right. I don't need a movie advocating for a war. Like, right. Please don't do that.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, First Blood Part 2, weirdly enough, came out in 1985, which was the same year that Rocky IV came out. And in Rocky IV, Sylvester Stallone single-handedly wins the Cold War. And in First Blood Part 2, he single-handedly goes back to Vietnam and wins the Vietnam War. Like, that was his thing for the mid-80s.
You know, good for him, I guess.
But anyway, Rambo 5... I mean, I might check it out if it comes out. Like, I had the meaning to watch Rambo 3 and Rambo for a long time anyway, if only so I can make sense of those titles. But, so I don't know what this would end up being called, because, I mean, they already took the single name one with Rambo, like, Rambo 4 was just called Rambo, right?
Right.
And Rambo 3 is the only title that makes sense, because it's the third Rambo movie. But it's also not really the third Rambo movie, because Rambo First Blood Part 2 is technically the first one called Rambo, but First Blood is just on its own.
All right. I think we've spent too much time on this.
We can never spend enough time dissecting the logic behind the Rambo titles, Mike. But we should move on and talk about the next most excited movie I am to discuss about in the things that we... What are words, even?
We'll never know.
So, Mike, as you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is probably almost at an end.
Right.
And as you may also know, he hasn't really been in many other movies besides Marvel movies in a really long time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure 2014 was the last time he was in a movie that wasn't a Marvel movie where he wasn't Tony Stark. That was the year The Judge came out, and also the year Chef came out. He was in both of those movies. And I feel like since then, it's just been Tony Stark all the way. There might be one or two in there that I'm forgetting about, but for the most part, it's really just Tony Stark this entire decade. But in 2008, when he became Iron Man, right, that was such a huge boost for his career, and he ended up being in a lot of movies for a couple of years, right? He was in Due Date, and he was in Tropic Thunder, and he had another big blockbuster franchise the year after Iron Man came out, in 2009, Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes.
That's right.
And now they ended up making two of those movies, Sherlock Holmes and Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows, with him and Jude Law. This franchise has laid dormant since 2011, and now it's coming back, Mike. Sherlock Holmes 3 is officially happening.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Are you a fan of those Sherlock Holmes movies?
I actually really am, yeah. I'm a big fan of Guy Ritchie movies sort of in general. So then you pair that up with Sherlock Holmes, well, you know, the detective series, you know, detective stuff, and Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law. I have a blast with those movies, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I will say, I went to the theater to go see Sherlock Holmes. I had a girlfriend at the time who I was making out with a lot, and so I missed most of that movie.
So you missed most of it. All right.
But I did see Sherlock Holmes 2 in theaters, and I remember thinking there was a couple of really fun sequences, but that it just didn't add up for me all the way. But it did have Jared Harris as Moriarty, and he was great in it.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in a Sherlock Holmes 3 for sure. I think Downey Jr. and Jude Law are a fun team. There's no word yet if Guy Ritchie's returning, though, which is kind of a key thing for me.
Ooh, yeah. No, I agree. I think that the way those movies are, they require Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I think he's working on Disney's Aladdin right now, which is still insane to think about.
I forgot about that. Oh, shit.
Where Jason Statham is playing Aladdin. It's going to be great. Yeah. Vinny Jones as the genie. It's going to be amazing. And then I think he's also working on, like, a new London crime drama, which he hasn't done in a long time, like a new London crime movie. So I don't know if he has time to make a Sherlock Holmes 3 if it's going to hit 2020. We'll see what happens. What is interesting about this date, though, it's December 2020 that's supposed to come out, which puts it against Avatar 2 if that movie still hits the December 2020 release date, which is kind of funny because the original Avatar faced off against the original Sherlock Holmes back in 2009.
Whoa.
They opened around the same time. And these movies, like Avatar 2 and Sherlock Holmes 3, are actually slated for the exact same dates that the original Avatar and the original Sherlock Holmes were released. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. Just wild bit of trivia for you there. But anyway, yeah. So that's Sherlock Holmes 3. I think I'm tentatively excited about that one. Now I want to move on to some long-awaited sequels that I'm really excited about, Mike. And I don't know what this says about me that I'm more excited about these movies than I was...
About Rambo, those other two. Holmes.
But that's the way it is. First of all, Mike, I don't know about you, but I'm a huge fan of the band Tenacious D.
Yeah. I don't know a whole ton of their music. I mean, the stuff that I have heard, I enjoy, and it's funny and goofy and, like, you know, tongue-in-cheek metal stuff. But I'm not, like, an avid listener, or I don't know much of their, like, any of their songs by name or anything.
Okay. They have three albums. I own all of them. And they came out with a movie back in 2006 called Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny. That's where I first heard Tenacious D. I was 13 at the time. And I remember just I liked Jack Black at that point. Like, I knew who Jack Black was because of School of Rock and stuff like that. And Tenacious D just looked like a movie that was made specifically for me. It was all in like this heavy metal music and stuff like that, which is but it was also Jack Black. It's gonna be funny, and I couldn't see it in theaters because it was rated R and nobody would take me because it was a good choice. They shouldn't have. But I did end up getting the soundtrack for that movie that year for Christmas or whatever, and I listened to that constantly. I loved the Pick of Destiny soundtrack
because it's a pick a destiny. A destiny child, more precious than a diamond on a platinum chain.
And now, here's the news. Tenacious D, in addition to coming out with a new album, and they just announced a new tour for the first time in 5 years, they're making another movie, Mike.
What?
They're making a Pick of Destiny 2, or whatever it's going to be called. Like, Tenacious D in a new adventure or whatever. I'm excited about this.
Was Pick of Destiny, I assume it's like a cult movie, right? It couldn't have done very well at the box office.
Oh, it did terribly at the box office.
Okay. I just had a double check.
Yeah, no, it did very poorly at the box office, even though there was a lot of promotion around it. I think because Jack Black was kind of at the height of his superstardom, right in the mid-2000s, right? That was, and I remember Tenacious D even performed on SNL as a musical guest and stuff like that. Like, there was a lot of hype around the Tenacious D movie, and it just completely bombed the box office. But it has gained a cult following. Like, I saw it just a few months after it hit theaters. Like, I've met people in my life who are also big fans of Tenacious D. Problem is, it's a movie that caters to stoners, and stoners were too lazy to go see the movie. I think is basically what happened. The news that Tenacious D is working on a new movie is very exciting to me. Like, Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny, I don't think is a great movie, but it is a movie that I love very much. as I'm watching it, I'm thinking like this, like these parts aren't good. But then you get to another part where it's like, okay, this is amazing, and it's a mixed bag of stuff. You know, it's a goofy stoner comedy, and I think it leans into that pretty well. And the music kicks ass. I think Tenacious D's soundtrack to that movie, because they do the entire soundtrack, is fantastic, and it's got amazing cameos from Meatloaf and Ronnie James Dio and Dave Grohl. Paul F. Tompkins is in the
nice
one of these things, not like the other, but yeah. Amy Poehler is in it, and I think Fred Armisen's in that movie too. There's a lot of people in that movie. Have you seen Pick of Destiny? I'm assuming you have.
No, I haven't.
No?
Actually,
oh man,
it's my Super Troopers for you.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we have led different lives. I guess that's...
Yeah, we've seen different stoner comedies.
Yes. Speaking of, Mike, you were recently hanging out with me this past weekend, or 2 weekends ago, and I don't know how this came up, probably because I was talking about this last story in the long-awaited sequel news.
I think so.
But I was like, man, I'm really excited about this movie coming out. I've been waiting for this for so long. Like, I've been waiting. And you were like, yeah, I've never seen those first two movies. And I was like, what? What?
You were shocked, taken aback.
I was genuinely floored that you had not seen either of the Bill and Ted films, Mike.
much to my chagrin.
You know, it's almost mind-boggling to me, because those two movies were formative movies for me. I love the Bill and Ted movies to death. And for years, Mike, I would say, like, it's been like 10 years they've been talking about doing a Bill and Ted 3. Like, Keanu Reeves has always been on board. Alex Winter hasn't been doing much else, so he's been on board. And finally... Fuck yes, Bill and Ted Face the Music is officially happening. Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter are coming back. It's going to be directed by Dean Parasot, who's the director of Galaxy Quest. He's been attached to this project for a while. It's written by the same screenwriters that did the first two movies. It's actually produced by Steven Soderbergh, too, which is pretty wild.
What? That's
pretty
awesome.
Insane. And they've been talking about this movie for so long. Like, I know a lot about what it's supposed to be about. Like, Bill and Ted are supposed to be older, and you know, having to deal with the fact that they're in their like mid-40s now, but they haven't written that song that was supposed to save the world yet, and they're confused and like wondering why they didn't fulfill their destinies. And I assume there's gonna be time travel shenanigans and supernatural stuff going on. Basically, Mike, you gotta watch Bill and Ted. I don't understand how you haven't watched it at this point. I think Bill and Ted, like, legit, the original Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is as close to a perfect movie as has ever been made.
Wow, bold claim.
It is amazing. I think about that movie all the time. It's wonderful. There's the guy who plays Abraham Lincoln in that movie, I think, is the definitive cinematic Abraham Lincoln. More so than Daniel Day-Lewis.
Get fucked, Daniel Day-Lewis.
His speech at the end of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where he addresses San Dimas High School and tells them to be excellent to each other, it brings a tear to my eye, Mike, to this day. It's amazing.
Wow. 4 score and 7 minutes ago, we, your forefathers, were brought forth upon a most excellent adventure, conceived by our new friends, Bill and Ted. These two great gentlemen are dedicated to a proposition which was true in my time, just as it's true today. Be excellent to each other. And party on, dudes!
So Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, like, I mean, you're a fan of Keanu Reeves. I'm surprised.
I know
that you.
I'll save it for when we do Complete Works season 2, and we do Keanu Reeves.
That's gonna be so long from now. we got 50 more Cage movies to get through before we get to Keanu Reeves.
We'll be old men by then, but worth it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so Bill and Ted 3, Bill and Ted Face the Music, is officially happening, and it seems like it's going to be shooting pretty soon, which is pretty awesome. It's a good time to be a Bill and Ted fan, I gotta say. I'm really excited about this. Anyway, let's move on from these long-awaited sequels, Mike. We got some other projects we gotta talk about. Some new directorial projects have been lined up. As you know, we're fans of Steven Spielberg here on this podcast.
Yeah, hot take.
hot take. Steven Spielberg is good. And yeah. And he just recently lined up a new project where he's working on a biopic about Ulysses S. Grant, the U.S. president, in case anybody didn't know who that was. And he's got Leonardo DiCaprio in talks to play him, too, which is pretty cool. So what do you think of this, Mike? Would you be into a Spielberg Ulysses S. Grant movie?
Yeah, sure, I guess. I feel like I'd probably be on board with, like, 98% of things that had Spielberg's name attached to them.
True.
I'm not sure what that 2% would be that I'm not on board with, but I'm just going to leave myself some wiggle room just in case.
Fair.
But yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio reuniting with Spielberg, I'm down.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't worked together since Catch Me If You Can, which is, I think, one of the most underrated movies in Spielberg's filmography. That movie's fantastic. Although I am a little disappointed because Jared Harris, who was Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes movies, also played Ulysses S. Grant in Spielberg's Lincoln.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think it would have been amazing if he was able to cast Jared Harris and start, like, his own Lincoln cinematic universe.
Oh, my God.
Yes. You know, Spielberg just made a bunch of Reconstruction era movies, and it started with Lincoln, moved on to Grant, had, you know, the fucking, who was it? Who was the?
We've been to college.
We've been to college. I completely blanked on who the next president was, or the president between them. Was it Andrew Davis was the Confederacy, right?
Am I thinking? I don't remember. He's the guy that ruined Reconstruction, though. I do remember that.
Anyway, you know, Andrew Davis was the director of The Fugitive. Never mind.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
We're a movie podcast, not a history podcast.
Anyway, yeah, I think Spielberg working on a Ulysses Grant movie is very exciting.
Jefferson Davis.
Jefferson Davis, but he was the Confederacy guy, right? That's he was the president of the Confederacy. We're still blank on who was the president in between Lincoln and Grant, but doesn't matter.
The point is,
go follow our history podcast if you want to learn more history facts. Anyway, Spielberg doing Ulysses Grant movie, I think is really cool. I think that's a very exciting prospect. You know, I did a report on Ulysses Grant back in like third grade, so I know a little bit about Grant.
You can say I'm a bit of an authority.
So if he wants to talk to somebody who knows a little bit about Grant, you know, just give me a call, Spielberg.
Tweet me.
Yeah, just tweet me. DM me, Spielberg. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I don't know when it will happen. I know he's working on West Side Story right now and Indiana Jones 5.
Right.
Like, those are the next two on the docket, like, for sure, it seems like. And then there was talk about that DC movie that's never going to happen. And and there was, I think that's something, The Kidnapping of Edgardo Martato was another one that has been on the books for a while. So there's a lot of stuff that Spielberg has in the works, which has always been the case. So, but I think this has a better chance of happening than a lot of the other ones. I think DiCaprio being on board is a big step. Other than that, I also want to talk about another director who's doing something really cool. Director John Woo, Mike, who just came out with a brand new movie called Manhunt. It's available on Netflix right now, and I'll talk about it in my discussions. But he's, I think, on the verge of a comeback. You know, John Woo started in the late 80s, early 90s, did some of the great Hong Kong action movies like Hard Boiled and stuff like that. Moved on to American cinema for a while, of course. He was the director of Face Off, one of the great action films of the 90s. And since then, since like the mid-2000s, he moved back to Hong Kong, and he's been doing a lot of historical epics. which is cool. And, yeah, he did like Red Cliff and The Crossing, and I haven't seen those movies. I've heard mixed things about them. Like, I feel like John Woo hasn't been playing to his strengths in recent years. You know, he's been doing the non-action stuff, and right. John Woo is an action filmmaker. Like, first and foremost, that's where he's most well-suited. So the news that John Woo is going to be doing an American remake of one of his own Hong Kong films, The Killer, is pretty exciting. That, to me, is pretty awesome. Have you seen The Killer, Mike?
No, I don't think I've seen much of Woo's early work. I've seen Hard Boiled, but I don't think I've seen many of those other movies in that era.
Okay, well, The Killer, I mean, Hard Boiled, I think, is considered his masterpiece, but The Killer, I think, is the movie that really put him on the map in a big way. I mean, A Better Tomorrow as well, but I feel like The Killer was really the first, like, big international hit that he had in the late 80s. And that starred Chow Yun-fat as an assassin who teamed up with a police officer. And now John Woo is remaking this movie in America, starring Lupita Nyong'o in the Chow Yun-fat role.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I am really excited about this. Like, I think this could be the big John Woo comeback movie. I think Lupita Nyong'o could have an incredible action presence in this movie. Like, that's an incredible sentence that I get to say on this podcast. It's John Woo remakes The Killer with Lupita Nyong'o. Like, just take all my money right now. I'm down. That's really cool. And there's still news to get through, Mike. We still got to talk about some stuff. As you know, Mike, we've covered this in the podcast in the past. Amazon is shelling out like $1 billion for this Lord of the Rings TV show.
Yeah.
You may have noticed that the price of Prime has gone up.
It went up $20.
Yeah,
fuck
now,
off, Amazon.
It costs like $119 now rather than $100, and I'm almost positive it's because hobbits are not cheap.
That's definitely what it's gonna be.
But now we have an idea of what the show will actually be about. Supposedly it's gonna run like 5 seasons. They're spending $1 billion on it, and now we know that Amazon is making a Lord of the Rings TV show based on the adventures of young Aragorn.
Oh, that's great. We're just going to spend $1 billion for a show nobody cares about. That's fine. Or a story, sorry. A story nobody cares about.
Yeah, I mean...
We're going to set Lord of the Rings in a part of the world and in a timeline where it's not the Lord of the Rings story. All right.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I feel like Lord of the Rings should have, like, they should have learned their lesson from the Hobbit movies that we're not really that interested in Lord of the Rings prequels. You know, I mean, then again, the Hobbit did make like $1 billion each, like whatever. But like, it's still like those weren't good movies, you know. And like, I'm looking at their reaction to like the new Han Solo movie, which is coming out, the young Han Solo that Disney's putting out with Star Wars, and it's been pretty mixed, to say the least. Like, I think it's veered toward positive, but like mixed, I think, would be the word to use.
Yeah.
And I just don't know that the adventures of young Aragorn are that interesting. Like, I mean, to be fair, I don't know that much about Aragorn in his younger days. Because I'm not, like, the biggest Lord of the Rings fan. Like, I like Lord of the Rings. I've seen the movies a couple of times, but I'm not, you know, somebody who's obsessively watched them or who's obsessively, you know, read the Silmarillion and stuff like that. Like, I just know it as a cursory thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Aragorn, he's cool. I like Aragorn. You know, I got nothing against Aragorn. He's a fun guy.
Yeah.
I doubt they'll get Viggo Mortensen back to play young Aragorn.
That'd be weird.
That would be weird if they got older Viggo Mortensen to play young Aragorn. Maybe like half elves age in reverse.
Yeah, well, I do remember that he's like actually super old in the Lord of the Rings movie. Like, he's like 90 at that
right.
at the time. So I guess that like he could have had a long life of adventure. But it just, like, what I hear, when I hear the phrase, it's going to follow the stories of young Aragorn, I picture, like, the cheap, or not, maybe not cheap's not the right word, but, like, the like, glossy MTV version of what this movie would, like, what this show would look like. Like, it's like a hot romance show,
yeah.
And it would just, like, be not what people were into, and that's what I'm picturing when I hear that phrase, so.
I'm picturing the young Pope, but with Aragorn, is basically...
Yeah, basically.
This is an Aragorn who fucks, Mike. Get ready. It's going to be great. Anyway, that's the young Aragorn news. We'll keep up on that as more news comes out. There is a rumor that Peter Jackson might be involved, which, I mean, like,
sure.
Like, kind of interesting, but also, like, dude, like, get out of the Lord of the Rings game. You're done. You got to throw in the towel. At some point.
You've used up your goodwill. Don't make it worse.
But anyway, I got one last bit of actual film news, Mike, and this is really exciting. This was just announced today.
Shrek fucking 5. Finally. It's happening.
Mike, if we were going to talk about Shrek 5, I would have put it in the long-awaited sequels category.
No, you were saving it for the end because you bury the lead. It's fine.
No, it's not Shrek 5, Mike. Damn. Instead, what we have is pretty exciting. This was just announced today. As you know, there's a new Spider-Man movie coming out next year.
Yes.
Called Spider-Man Homecoming 2, or Spider-Man Winter Formal, or whatever it ends up being called. one of the Spider-Man villains that I have always wanted to see on film has been Mysterio. Are you familiar with Mysterio, Mike?
I am.
Okay, good. Yeah, Mysterio is a Hollywood visual effects artist named Quentin Beck, who uses, Hollywood trickery and illusions to create, things that people are seeing in the world or whatever. And they're using Mysterio in the next Spider-Man movie. He's going to be played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. I'm here to help. I am Mysterio, and I am putting Spider-Man on notice. There's no place you'll be able to hide, and nowhere you can run.
As far as I'm concerned, you're just another creep in a costume. What can you do?
I was hoping you'd ask.
How did you do that?
Cheap parlor trick.
I guarantee you I'll catch Spider-Man, but I want all you big-shot media people there to record it. And now that I've started things rolling, don't drop the ball. Got it?
It's just going to be his character from Nightcrawler.
That's what people were saying. I heard a lot of people say it could be his character from Nightcrawler, which I'd be into. I'd be kind of more into it if he was doing his character from Okja, where he was just fucking off the rails, like insane. That was like basically a Nicolas Cage performance, but with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, God.
I'm hoping for a mix of those two, honestly. So Jake Gyllenhaal likely playing Mysterio in the next Spider-Man movie, which is kind of weird because Jake Gyllenhaal almost played Spider-Man at one point. Tobey Maguire was renegotiating his contract after Spider-Man 1 came out before Spider-Man 2, and there was a real possibility that Tobey Maguire would not have come back for Spider-Man 2 and Jake Gyllenhaal would have replaced him. And that thankfully didn't happen at that time because I love me some Tobey. But now he's drawn back to the Spider-Man franchise. Pretty wild. I think I saw somebody tweet, Dave Itzkoff from New York Times tweeted that you either become Tobey Maguire or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain in a Spider-Man Spider-Man series.
I like it.
Yeah, but also in addition to this news, it turns out Michael Keaton is coming back to the Spider-Man franchise as the Vulture, who is obviously the villain of Spider-Man Homecoming. And that kind of builds off of the post-credit scene of that movie. You know, he was still alive. He was in jail talking to Scorpion and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays back into the narrative of this movie. But who knows? Maybe this is all gaslighting, Mike, because obviously after the fate of Spider-Man in Infinity War, who knows how they could possibly do a Spider-Man movie, you know?
It makes
no sense.
It's actually a secret Venom sequel.
It's Oh, God.
We're not allowed to know.
Yeah, I would kind of be into it. I think I saw Griff Newman tweeting this online the other today. Wouldn't it be crazy if they cast Tobey Maguire to play a villain in these Spider-Man movies?
Like,
in
one of the... Oh, my God.
Like, wouldn't that be awesome. Amazing? But, yeah. I mean, what do you think about Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio, Mike? Like, how do you feel about that casting choice?
I'm down. I'm down for that. I think Jake Gyllenhaal can pull off a great, crazy character and just to see like the goofiness of Mysterio and I love that they're for you know Homecoming was the Vulture, such a small scale character, and Mysterio right. too I feel like is a smaller scale character. He's not Green Goblin, he's or smaller profile maybe I should say. So I'm excited to see what they do or I'm excited that they are doing these kinds of villains in the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, definitely. I mean this is a villain I've wanted to see for a really long time. I mean, my ideal casting for this would have been Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, obviously, for anything.
And I'm positive if Sam Raimi had kept making Spider-Man movies, that would have happened at some point.
Eventually.
It just would have had to happen. But, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is a good casting choice, too. I also, honestly, I would love to see Nicolas Cage as Mysterio as well. I think he would knock it out of the park.
They got to save him to be, what's his name's brother, though? Jeff Goldblum.
Right, Jeff Goldblum's brother in Thor 4. That's a callback to our Nicolas Cage podcast.
You're welcome, everybody.
So you got to listen to that. It's a cinematic universe of podcasts that we got going on right here.
Mm-hmm. A podcastiverse.
A podcastiverse, yes. So that wraps up the film news segment for today, except for one last thing, Mike. I wanted to give a shout out to Margot Kidder, who died last week. I don't know how old she was, but Margot Kidder obviously was an iconic 70s and 80s actress. I mean, she, of course, was Lois Lane in the Superman movies in the 80s. And, you know, that to me is like the definitive love interest character in any superhero movie is Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. I think she's amazing in those movies. I mean, you've seen the first two Supermans, obviously, right?
Yeah, so I think it's a tragedy for these, you know, in the early history of comic book movies and like that kind of, you know, story. And she was great as Lois Lane. So
yeah, I mean, I think you know, I was thinking back on it. It's to me, it's almost kind of surreal that they ended up making a Superman movie in the late 70s, right? I mean, because that was like post-Watergate and everything like that. And I feel like America was in a very cynical place, and Superman comes through with this very idealistic sense of superheroism. But I think what's so great about Lois Lane in those movies, as played by Margot Kidder, is that she is that voice of 70s cynicism, right? Mm-hmm. She is like, has seen it all. She's done everything. And Superman is this like beacon of brightness. And like the way those two contrast and clash against each other and end up falling in love, I think is really powerful and interesting.
In the East Side Murder case, the way I see it, it's a banner headline, front page, maybe an aperture.
There's only one P in rapist. Lois Lane, say hello to Clark Kent.
Told you one P.
Hi, remember my dynamite expose on the sex and drug orgies in the senior citizens home? Remember the senior...
How you doing? Jimmy Olsen, photographer.
Oh, hi, Clark Kent. Nice to meet you.
It's got everything. It's got sex, it's got violence, it's got the ethnic angle. I mean, look
yeah,
at
so is a lady wrestler with a foreign accent. Ken, can you open this?
Oh, sure, Mr. White.
This could be the basis for a whole series of articles, Making Sense of Senseless Killing by Lois Lane. I mean, we get psychologists, we get...
Lois, you're pushing a bunch of rinky-dink tabloid garbage. The Daily Planet has a petition.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to shake it up like that.
Oh, well, of course not, Lois. I mean, why would anyone want to make a total stranger look like a fool?
But even beyond Superman, I mean, she was in Amityville Horror, Black Christmas. We saw her in Sisters at the Alamo Drafthouse last year as part of December of the Alamo. We saw that in 35mm, the Brian De Palma film. She's amazing in that movie. She's incredible. I mean, she has that incredible dual role where she's, like, equally creepy and stuff like that. So in addition to being, you know, Superman's girlfriend, she was also a pretty iconic horror actress in the 70s and 80s. So, yeah, R.I.P. Margot Kidder. And now we should move on, Mike. Let's go into our discussions starting right now.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're gonna talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, now it's time for our discussions here on Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
Today I have a horror movie to talk about. You know, speaking of iconic horror people, I have the new movie named Revenge.
Okay, I've heard of this.
Yeah, this is it's out in limited release right now. Basically, it's in Manhattan, as far as I can tell. It's also, I did see the New York area draft houses have it, Alamo Draft House.
Okay.
So it is playing at Yonkers and in Brooklyn. So that's pretty cool. But this is a movie that it's in a subgenre of horror that I'm not entirely sure needs to exist, or it does, though. And this is the Rape Revenge movie,
okay.
Which is, you know, it's an exploitation film, or that genre is an exploitation horror genre. And it's pretty self-explanatory what usually happens in these movies.
Right.
But this one, what stands out for Revenge is that it's written and directed by first-time feature, their first feature film, Coralie Fargeet? I'm not sure. It's she's French. I'm not sure how to pronounce
okay.
that. But so the thing that makes this stand out is this is a rape revenge story as told by a woman, which most of these movies... you know, Last House on the Left, the, you know, big movies, tent poles of this genre, Straw Dogs, I Spit on Your Grave, all these things.
Yep.
Tend to focus on the brutality of the rape, and it's, you know, the male gaze and all of these things that make these movies hard exploitation and uncomfortable for me to, like, really watch or stomach.
Yeah.
They typically, you know, have the great revenge afterwards, but this movie is... focuses, it's in the title, right? It's revenge. That is the focus of this movie. It's about that part, and it goes to 11 when it hits that the second act. This is a absolutely incredible story and film. It is in French, like the dialogue. There's little dialogue, but what if it is in French?
Okay.
And it is the most graphic yet satisfying violence I think I've seen in a movie in a really long time.
Oh, wow.
It stars Matilda Lutz as the main character, Jess. And it's she, you know, survives the encounter of what goes on. And then just systematically hunts down across, like, this desert. I'm not really sure where they are. They're just kind of in the desert. And the thing that makes this stand out so much is it's really highly stylized. It's sort of like there's a couple shots that sort of remind me of the look of John Wick, just where it's, like, really deep purples and pinks and blues, yeah. Which in this, like, alien desert landscape of with these people just covered in blood is, like, wild. So it is definitely a sight to behold, and I think it is really powerful, and honestly probably could let's close the book on this subgenre after this one, I think. We get the female take on it. She does it better, I think, than many of these movies. And it is obviously, you know, heavily influenced by the Me Too movement and all of these rise in the call for equality and all this stuff, and down with the patriarchy, and it's fucking awesome. So I think people should check it out. Like I said, it's playing, I think, in Manhattan only, probably LA, but it is available to rent on Amazon. So
okay, yeah, it's on video on demand right now. Yeah, I think I may have to make that leap pretty soon. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I've been hearing nothing but great things about Revenge, so definitely gonna check that out at some point. And then we got my discussions to get to you, Mike. This is a two-way podcast.
Yeah, that's how this works.
So actually, before I talk about my official discussions, I should mention the two of us went to a movie marathon recently.
Yes, we did.
And we can't say where it was or what it was or who was involved with the putting on of this marathon.
Right.
However, you know, They said we couldn't say, you know, what movies we saw at this marathon on social media and stuff like that. But I figure if we don't say where we were or who was involved with putting it on or, you know, anything like that, I think it's okay to just mention the movies, right? We can just talk about the movies, like, a little bit about our thoughts on those movies. So
we happen to just watch them all in a row. That's all.
Exactly.
What a weird coincidence.
We saw six horror movies together. It was a blast. And the first one was a movie called Space Avenger.
AIP Studios presents, in the tradition of The Terminator and Aliens, comes Alien Space Avenger. When an alien spacecraft is forced to make a crash landing on Earth,
there's something alive in there.
The aliens lay dormant for 50 years before being awakened. The aliens are awake.
Nobody's giving themselves up. You got that?
But the nightmare,
I told you that it was a spaceship,
has just begun. Alien Space Avenger.
Had you ever heard of Space Avenger, Mike?
No, not even a tiny bit.
Okay, this was from the director of Class of Nukem High. I had also never heard of Space Avenger, but this is about these four aliens that travel to Earth and take over these bodies of people in the 1930s, wake up 50 years later in the 80s, and start to cause havoc. And then there's one comic book writer who discovers their secret and has to defeat them. I thought it was a blast. You, yeah. Mike?
Yeah, I had a ton of fun with this movie. It's so goofy, so 80s, and yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Space Avenger. It was very colorful. It was actually, part about it was a Technicolor movie, which is kind of rare for the 80s, and the director had to go over to China to actually get the Technicolor print made back in the day. So I think that was a pretty interesting side note to that movie. But yeah, Space Avenger, worth checking out. I think it's very difficult to find, but if you can find it, check it out. And then there was a movie called Graduation Day, which was from 1981. And this was a pretty, like, run-of-the-mill slasher movie, I guess you could say. I think it's in the wake of the Friday the 13th franchise being a big hit. You know, yeah. It was one of those things where it's just like, okay, it's a high school, kids are dying, go. And but for what it was, I thought it was pretty solid. I had some fun with it. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I had a really good time with Graduation Day. I think it's one of those movies that it's, you know, maybe it was, I don't know when it came out in that trend of slasher movies, but it seemed to come out late enough to be sort of aware of the tropes, right? We keep seeing the killer POV shot with the black leather gloves and a stopwatch, and then the movie keeps making a point to show us many people that have black leather gloves and shot stopwatches,
right?
So we have no idea who the killer is, but we think it's this person, and then it could be this guy.
Yep.
And that was really fun. And the musical chase scene, which how could we not about during the like school dance before graduation day.
Yes. Yeah, I got to look up that song, actually, because there was a song, I forgot the name of the song, but it was awesome. Like, it was a killer song. No pun intended, but...
Hey.
But anyway, yeah, so that was Graduation Day, solid slasher if you can find it. And then there was the movie that I felt was the weakest of the day, which was Creature, which I think was from 1985, and it's an alien ripoff, but it's also a Thing ripoff, and they mentioned that in the dialogue of the movie.
Super weird.
They like, just blatantly address it. There's a one point in the movie where a character is like, you know, I saw this movie once where this alien defeated these people, and it's like, oh, really? Like, really?
You're going to do that now?
Yeah, so, I mean, how was your take on Creature, Mike?
Creature was my nap movie, so normally around there, movie 3 or 4, you start getting a little tired, and you're just kind of like, all right, I'll wait 20 minutes, and I'll see, okay, no, this is nap movie, and they go to sleep. if it wasn't, I would have waited for movie 4, but movie 3 was the one for me.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Creature did have some pretty cool effects work, and I think an interesting side note about Creature is that the guys who did the effects for this movie ended up going on to do the effects for James Cameron's Aliens. Which is kind of ironic. Yes. anyway, so that's Creature, and then we saw a movie called The Final Terror.
There is nothing to be afraid of.
They wouldn't have left us up here all night if there wasn't something wrong.
Your friends aren't really missing. They're not really dead. This is just some kind of joke.
What the hell was that?
That thing that's out there, whatever it is, can't be real. It's just your imagination.
I swear I'm not dreaming! I'm not dreaming!
Or maybe, just this once, you're dead wrong.
Once upon a time.
The legend is told in whispers, an unholy tale of an unknown force alien to this world.
You don't know what you're dealing with, lady.
Without knowing, they have awakened a terrifying evil.
We want to get out of here!
Alone and unprotected, now comes the naked horror. The Final Terror.
Which is has had some pretty awesome early performances from, I think, Joe Pantoliano was the big one.
Yeah.
Also, was Daryl Hannah in that movie? I think she was, right?
Yes. Yeah, she was.
Yes. And I feel like somebody else. I'm blanking on who else was in the movie. I didn't take a ton of notes on these because we were just kind of going
something
through
them.
Mark Metcalf. Yes, Mark Metcalf, who was the master in the first season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
Who I don't think I ever saw him without like full makeup on, because he is like this white makeup with the pointy ears and stuff like that. I had no idea what he looked like in real life, but I saw his name in the credits and I was like, is that, I don't know, like I know I know the name, but I can't remember from what. And like it took me like, I feel like halfway through the movie it just like clicked on me. He's like, is that the master? Super weird. But what did you think of The Final Terror, Mike? I feel like you were pretty positive on this movie, right?
Yeah, I really like this. This is just a straight Friday the 13th ripoff. Camp counselors. So this is the Pacific Northwest, being hunted by a other weirder camp counselor, basically. And it was just fun. It's just a slasher movie, you know, creepy wood stuff. I think it's really funny. The interactions between all the camp counselors, like trying to steal weed from people that grow weed in the forest in Pacific Northwest, like hilarious. Right. And it's got some tense slasher goodness, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. I thought this one was a little slow. You know, it takes a long time to get to where it's going, and I'm not sure where it's going was worth all that much. But I think Joe Pantoliano was a lot of fun in the as the bad guy in this movie.
Because
I love Joe Pantoliano, and just seeing him as like in this really early role for him, I thought it was pretty cool. Also, this was directed by Andrew Davis, the president of,
of the Confederacy.
But anyway, then movie number 5 was a big one, Mike. This was like the headliner movie. It was George Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
In 1968, George Romero brought us Night of the Living Dead. It became the classic horror film of its time.
Not that room! Not that room!
Now, George Romero brings us the most intensely shocking motion picture experience for all times.
It gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill. This situation must be controlled before it's too late. They are multiplying too rapidly.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, so you had never seen Dawn of the Dead, right?
Yeah, I had never seen the original Dawn of the Dead. I've seen the Snyder one, right? Which I didn't know was Zack Snyder, which is crazy.
Right.
So I was excited to see the original version of this. Different, which I was surprised by somehow.
Yeah, no, and this movie's a blast. I mean, we don't have to tell you this movie's great. It's great.
But yeah, it was awesome.
And it was a blast to see with this crowd, like the people who just immediately, like, they recognized the movie from the first frame. Like, as soon as it, like, popped up and it was just, like, the red on the screen, they were like, holy shit! And,
like, yeah, like, whatever production company gets the first credit, people went insane for it. Which is crazy.
And it was awesome. So, yeah, Dawn of the Dead, it's awesome. Watch it if you haven't. It's great. And then the final movie of the night was called Night Warning, although it's also known by the name Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, which is a much better title.
Such a better title. Holy shit.
Billy and Julie, young, innocent, in love. It was all a mistake. They didn't go looking for trouble. They were just too curious. Without knowing, they've uncovered a deadly secret. By accident, they've stumbled onto a grisly murder. Now, they know too much to live. A chilling tale of a young boy and girl, innocent victims, now targets of a frenzied obsession with murder. See the award-winning Night Warning.
But I had heard of this movie before. I'd never seen it, and so I was excited to, like, like, it seemed familiar to me as I was watching it. Like, I felt like I had heard, like, somebody had described it before, but I didn't know the title Night Warning, which is what it was presented as. And then later on, right, I found out that it was Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, and I was like, oh, okay, because they talked about it on the Pure Cinema podcast a while back. But anyway, yeah, so I really liked Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker. It was touch and go for a little while.
Oh, boy.
It's a little homophobic.
A little?
By a little, I mean a lot. But that's also part of the narrative, because it's meant to make you uncomfortable. Like, that's the bad guy who is homophobic.
Right.
In the movie. And you are waiting to see him get his comeuppance, and he gets it. It's pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
But it's about this, you know, this kid who, his parents die when he's young, and he goes to live with his aunt, and he grows up, and he's about to go away to college, but his aunt becomes obsessed with him, and obsessed with, like, living her life with him, and still him at the house, and this weird sexual relation. It's a weird Oedipal story going on here. Also has a really early role for Bill Paxton, who, that's pretty cool.
That was great.
And I'm blanking on the actress's name who plays the aunt in this movie, but she is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm upset at myself that I'm blanking on it, but she's great in the movie. So were you a fan of Night Warning / Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, Mike?
Yeah, yeah. I think I was very uncomfortable with the just blatant, I think, is it late 70s maybe or early 80s? Early 80s. Just like straight up homophobia. Because it's not clear that character is going to be a villain yet when that starts.
Right, especially because, I mean, that era, especially, like, in a lot of other movies, then that's not presented as villainous.
Exactly, movies, yeah. You know? So I was real nervous about where this movie was going, and then I was probably going to check out, I think, a little bit. But then it kind of turns around, and that character becomes a villain, and that becomes an evil quality about him, and I was like, okay, all right, you can save a little face creepy movie about aunts wanting to live with their nephews who might be their sons. yeah, but it was fun. It's just insane. It's just, like, bonkers. It's a great, like, midnight movie, which is basically what it was for us. So
yes, yeah, definitely. So that wraps up the marathon that we were at. It was a blast. We won't reveal where it was or who was there or anything else about it unless you talk to us in person. But anyway, I have a couple other discussions I want to talk about, Mike, before we move on to our featured review. A couple of recent films. I mentioned before that John Woo has a new movie out on Netflix. It's called Manhunt. And it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. This is a Woo's big return to action filmmaking, like I was saying before. And it kind of plays like a greatest hits of John Woo movies mixed with The Fugitive, you know, directed by the president of the Confederacy. And that is not a bad thing. You know, it's nonsense. None of it makes sense. But I think it's mostly pretty fun. Lots of badass John Woo fight scenes, plenty of doves. Like, what more could you want? You know?
Perfect. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, there's literally one scene where a dove saves somebody's life. It happens. It happens in the movie.
Oh my God.
It's very John Woo, and I enjoy watching it for that reason. I don't think the movie itself is great, but just watching John Woo back doing his thing, it's a lot of fun. And then I had one other movie to talk about, Mike. This movie was called Tully.
Do you know what a night nanny is? Oh. Okay, you know what? Everybody does it. It's just like a regular nanny, except they come at night. You know, they stay over for a few weeks or a month, and they take care of the baby at night so mom and dad can get some sleep. It's no big deal.
I don't want a stranger in my house bonding with my newborn every night. It's like a Lifetime movie where the nanny tries to kill the family and the mom survives and she has to walk with a cane at the end.
Right, well, we had a night nanny.
I don't remember that.
The reason you don't remember it is because she only came at night.
Greg, please tell me you didn't hire me one of those people.
You have a lot going on. Get over yourself. Call her. She comes highly recommended.
Which is the new movie from director Jason Reitman and written by Diablo Cody. And it stars Charlize Theron. Those three together made Young Adult many years back, which is a movie I really, really like. And this one stars Theron as a mother who is brought to the brink of exhaustion by the birth of her third kid. So she hires a night nanny, played by Mackenzie Davis. And it's a really engaging look at just parenthood and the realities of life versus the expectations of what you might think you wanted when you were young. I think Charlize Theron is great in this movie. The script has that kind of snark that you'd expect from a Diablo Cody production, but it feels like it comes from a more real place than something like Juno. Like, Juno is a movie that I've grappled with a lot over the decade or so that it's been out. So when I saw it the first time, like 2007, I did not like Juno. I was not a fan of that movie. And then for whatever reason, I've seen Juno like three or four times since then. And every single time I've seen it, I like it a little bit more.
Okay.
Because I think there is like a really strong emotional core to that movie. It's just buried under this kind of weird snark that did not work for me with Juno. Like, it feels like it's speaking its own language, and it's not a language I felt like I wanted any part of.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
But I have come to appreciate Juno a lot more in the decades since. But I really do like Young Adult. I think Young Adult's fantastic. I think Tully feels like a natural successor to both Juno and Young Adult in some ways. I think Jason Reitman tends to do his best work when he's working with Diablo Cody, and vice versa. I think Diablo Cody does her best work when she's working with Jason Reitman. So a lot of good stuff in Tully. I will say, I saw this movie at the local theater near my house, and I happened to do so in the middle of a tornado.
Okay.
So I'm assuming you heard that there was a gigantic storm going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know about this storm that was supposed to hit when I went to go see the movie. I was like, well, I'm going to go see this movie and then come back. And then I was in the movie theater, and it's towards the end of the movie. There's like 3 minutes left of the movie, and everything cuts to black. Ooh. And I'm thinking, oh, that was a really interesting place to end the movie. And I was actually like, wow, that's a great cut to black. And I was expecting the credits to roll any second. It turns out the power went out in my theater.
Oh, no.
And there was like 3 minutes left to go in the movie. And so somebody came in and was like, listen, there's a big storm outside, tornadoes and stuff like that. So, you know, sorry. but the power did come back on after a couple minutes, and we ended up being able to finish the movie. However, I kind of preferred the ending where the power
cuts to black.
Yeah, I thought because it cut to black in such a perfect place, where it just like completely wrapped up everything that was going on in the movie, and I was like, well, that was great. And then it turns out, no, there's like three more minutes, and they're kind of like they're fine. Like I got nothing against them, but it just felt like, oh, this could have ended just a couple minutes early. It would have been perfect.
But, amazing.
So a little weird there, but I was fine. By the way, the tornado didn't hit me.
I'm glad, Mike.
So there was that. But anyway, yeah, so that is Tully, and I think that wraps up our discussions, Mike, right?
Yeah.
All right, then let's move on. Let's go into our featured review of Deadpool 2, starting right now.
I ain't letting Cable kill this kid. But I can't do this alone.
Can you speak up? It's hard to hear you with that pity dick in your mouth.
We're gonna form a super-duper fucking group. We need them tough, morally flexible, and young enough to carry their own franchise for 10 to 12 years.
We will be known as X-Force.
Isn't that a little derivative?
You're absolutely right. Now, let's go get our fuck on.
All right, that was from the trailer for Deadpool 2, the new movie written by Rhett Reese, Paul Wernick, and Ryan Reynolds, and directed by David Leitch. It stars Ryan Reynolds, Josh Brolin, Marina Baccarin, Julian Dennison, Zazie Beetz, TJ Miller, Brianna Hildebrand, Stefan Kapacik, and Jack Casey, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Deadpool 2 reads, foul-mouthed mutant mercenary Wade Wilson, a.k.a. Deadpool, brings together a team of fellow mutant rogues to protect a young boy of supernatural abilities from the brutal time-traveling mutant Cable. So, Mike, Deadpool was a movie that I definitely enjoyed, but one that I ultimately thought was just fine. But you were a big fan of the original Deadpool, right?
Yeah, you were down on friend of the show Tim Miller. But yeah, I was a big fan of Deadpool. You know, it's actually something I was trying to think about recently after I saw the Deadpool 2. I haven't seen the original Deadpool, I think, since theaters.
Neither have I.
So I don't know if it might, like, what my opinion would be now if I had seen it. If I see it again, I mean. You know, it's not something I look back on with great joy. You know, I think it was fun. I remember, like, liking it a lot, but I'm not sure it's a movie that, like, is near and dear to me or anything like that.
Okay.
So maybe I've cooled down on it a little bit. I don't know. Deadpool 1, that is.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Deadpool 1, to me, felt very lightweight. It was often pretty juvenile, obviously.
Yeah.
But on a visual level, that movie felt very flat to me, too. But, you know, Ryan Reynolds embodied the role so well. That I think the movie still worked in spite of all that, and it made me look forward to a sequel that could hopefully improve on those points for me. And I don't know about you, Mike, but Deadpool 2 did just that for me. How about you?
Yeah, I actually really liked Deadpool 2, and I think this might be a movie that sticks with me more than Deadpool 1 did.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the core of Ryan Reynolds, he's still there and he's still strong, but every addition this movie makes to the cast, I mean, it's just a winner all around. Josh Brolin. Yeah. As Cable. I mean, so good. He's a great foil for Deadpool. Zazie Beetz is Domino. Like, completely badass. Loved her.
Yep.
And little Ricky Baker from Hunt for the Wilder People. Julian Dennison. He's gangsta as Fire Fist. He's great.
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited to see him. Plus, you know, we've replaced friend of the show Tim Miller with esteemed colleague of the show David Leitch.
Yeah.
who is the co-director of John Wick. He directed Atomic Blonde. He brings a lot to this movie, in the action department specifically, that I think really helps it out.
Yeah, I agree. I think a character like Deadpool needs to have this type of action, this very precise, over-the-top, well-directed action, as that's like half of his shtick, right? Most of the shtick is that he curses and breaks the fourth wall.
Right.
But the other part is that he's a badass assassin mercenary guy, right? So, like,
right.
Being able to have that compliment the Ryan Reynolds, right, what he's able to do with this character, being complimented with this incredible action, really elevates Deadpool to what it needs to be, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think, you know, this movie balances the insane Looney Tunes Deadpool shit with a heavy emotional arc, much like the first one did.
Yeah.
And I think this one does a better job of it. I could still do without the emotional arc in both movies, honestly, but you know, just go for the Looney Tunes shit and I'd probably be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this one has a better balancing act between the two. That first one, I feel like, you know, it's kind of hampered down by Deadpool's origins, and it's just like getting to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
Plus it has that flashback structure, which I feel like it's just, it doesn't really work for me. This movie, though, I mean, it starts off, like, you introduce, like, what the problem is, like, in the first few minutes, and then you kind of have Deadpool dealing with that over the course of the movie. And I think it, you know, it works a lot better. I think because it's not a flashback, honestly. I think because it's always moving forward, I feel like the story always feels like it has momentum to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it opens with just Looney Tunes shit, like you said. I think that's the perfect way to put this to describe what Deadpool is. Just the meme shit going on,
right?
And it's fun, and like that's what we're here for, right? Like when you sign up to go see a Deadpool movie, you know that's what you're getting. Yeah, and I think it manages to balance the emotional stuff and the driving force behind the plot is okay. I'm a little disappointed where they went with it, I think, and we'll talk about it in spoilers. But sure, whatever. It was fun. It's enough to get me invested or to get me interested in what Deadpool as a character is going through to see the Looney Tunes ultraviolence. And
right.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. The way it treats one character, I'm not the biggest fan of how it goes there, but it is worth it, I think, for the immediate joke afterwards. And then how the movie ends, I think, is it's worth it in the long run.
Yeah.
But it does feel, I don't know, a little, like, iffy at first. You know, I feel like I wasn't sure how I felt about it for a while. I'm also, like, you know, while I was watching it, I was really curious, like I enjoyed a lot of the stuff in the movie, and I enjoyed a lot of the in-jokes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I wasn't, like, a comic book fan or something like that, like, if I was just somebody who was, like, a casual viewer, I feel like these Deadpool movies might be, like, incomprehensible to me, like, on a dialogue level, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right. There's a lot of, you know, with Deadpool being a character that's aware that he's a comic book character, right, or in these movies.
Yeah.
That he's able to just reference and talk about other comic book movies and comic book lore and shit that... If you don't know what's going on, not that you need to be, like, you know, a scholar in these things, but, like, if you're right. just some guy that's, like, your friend wanted to go see this movie and you're like, okay, sure, you probably are lost as fuck.
Right, and that's, like, interesting to me because these movies have been super successful. Like, they seem to be hitting it. They have definitely tapped into an audience. I'm just, like, surprised, like not everyone of that audience can possibly be somebody who goes to see every superhero movie, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just don't know how that works out. But, like, there's jokes in the beginning of the movie. Like, he makes, like, a Martha joke referencing Batman vs. Superman. And it's like, yeah. like I enjoyed it. I thought that was very funny. But, like, if you didn't see Batman vs. Superman, like do you even, like, that just, like, fly over your head? Or, like, yeah, you know, I don't know. There's another bit where he references the domestic box office of the first movie and how it beat Passion of the Christ or something. And it's like...
Super weird.
Yeah, and it's like, if you don't follow box office numbers, like, are you going to get that joke? It holds on that for a while. It's like an elaborate thing. He talks to the camera and, like, does a whole thing. If you're not somebody who follows all that stuff, like, are you going to get that and are you going to laugh? Like, I don't know. But that's also, I think, part of it. Like, I'm not sure how well these movies will play 5 or 10 years from now. You know, I'm not sure if they'll stand the test of time. Because a lot of the jokes feel current in a way that might not hold up, even if they do make me laugh now.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be weird to see... what they are able, if they, like, continue to update these movies or what they do or where they, I don't know. I do agree with you that these feel very present, and they may date the movie, but
yeah. But overall, the jokes are very funny. I enjoyed the movie very much. I will say not enough Negasonic Teenage Warhead. She
again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I feel like I remember there being more in the first movie, but is she in not that much of it in the first one?
You know, I feel like maybe she doesn't get to do her superpower stuff a lot in the first one. I feel like she as a character is there a lot. But I don't remember.
I don't think... Did she get to do her superpowers at all in this movie? I don't think she did.
She does it, like, twice.
Okay.
Point is... I want it all the time.
Yeah, she's not in enough this movie. I did, however, love the running gag between Deadpool and her girlfriend, Yukio. Like, that was probably my favorite part of the movie was the way he just got really adorable and cute whenever he was saying bye Yukio and
also shout out to the first openly gay couple in a Marvel movie. Good for them.
Yeah, that's something. That's something.
That's neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think this movie does a pretty good job of you know, dealing with Deadpool, dealing with desire to be part of something bigger, even though he also wants to be, you know, his crazy self. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a good balancing act there. I mean, let's talk about Cable. What'd you think of Josh Brolin as Cable?
I think he's awesome. he's able to Brolin, like, as we know, is able to pull off just that, like, massive imposing figure and presence in a scene. And I think Cable, it's so funny just to see the tropiness that he is, right? Like, the time traveler goes back in time to stop the death of his family, like, whatever thing. It's amazing. Like, that's every movie in the 80s is that. And it's awesome. and I love what we're able to do with just the group as a whole. Like, that, you know, where... I mean, it's in the trailers, I think. Like, who he... You know, that they're recruiting a team, right? And I just... I think that might be where Deadpool shines. Him alone with his Looney Tunes shit might get old real quick in the next movie. But now if we have a group or something like that, I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, people for Deadpool to bounce off of, you're talking
yes.
about.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I really also enjoyed Josh Brolin as Cable. I thought he was great. You know, I feel like he doesn't get to do a ton of comedy movies, for whatever reason. And you know, for the most part, when he does the comedy movies, he's usually the straight man. And he is here, also the straight man, but he does get some funny lines. And he's just a great, like, foil for Deadpool, for somebody for Deadpool to bounce off of, because Cable is so super serious in everything he does, which is pretty great. I think it honestly reminded me the most of his role in Inherent Vice as the straight man in that movie, where he's just bouncing off, like, he is so straight-laced in that movie, but Joaquin Phoenix is going, like, nuts and off the rails in that movie. Mm-hmm. Although, at the same time, I think Josh Brolin might have the funniest moment in that movie, where he just eats a bunch of weed, and it's... Yeah. And it's great. So Cable doesn't eat any weed in this movie, which is a disappointment, but it's but it's good. And you know, with Thanos and with Cable, Josh Brolin has you know, reached the Marvel Hall of Fame, I guess, at this point. He's made the rounds this summer. But yeah, him and Domino, like I mentioned before, she's incredible. As far as the people from the first movie, like Colossus is here, he's still fun. You know, TJ Miller, he's also in the movie. Sure, why not, I guess. I mean,
yeah. It would have been awesome if they I forgot the Christopher Plummer to him.
If they recast him with Christopher Plummer.
Or just another person.
That would be pretty fun. Apparently, that was the thing that people were saying they should do. For like as soon as the TJ Miller stuff started coming out, like they were saying they should do that, and they didn't obviously do that. But there was apparently a joke in the movie. Like if you watch the news crawl, like early on, the crawl in the news saying that Christopher Plummer turned down a role in Deadpool 2.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah, so there is that at least. But but I will say, like by the end of the movie, I feel like you've got a team that I feel like I would like to watch in more movies. And I think that's a success on this movie's part. You know, there is the Drew Goddard X-Force movie that should be coming out at some point. If the Disney-Fox deal doesn't totally destroy it, I don't really know what the future of this franchise is right now. Because who knows? I know Fox has New Mutants and X-Men Dark Phoenix still, like, they have to come out at some point. And they have a lot of other movies in the works. But, like, also this Disney deal could screw some things up, so... Who really knows what could happen? But, you know, I think as far as this movie goes, I liked it a lot more than the first one. I think it does a lot of more interesting things. And I think I feel like I need to get into spoilers in order to talk about some of the other stuff. So should we move on, Mike?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do that. Let's move on to spoilers for Deadpool 2, starting right now. All right, it's time for spoilers for Deadpool 2, starting right now. So, Mike, this week... I watched a movie in which an incompetent hero assembles a team of the most hardcore badasses he can find, and before he can send them on their very first mission, they immediately die in spectacular fashion as a result of his actions. But enough about MacGruber, Mike. We gotta talk about Deadpool 2.
You son of a bitch.
They got MacGrubered, Mike. That's all I can think about.
Wow.
As soon as they started assembling the X-Force, I was like, they're gonna MacGruber these guys, aren't they? And they did. They did. Yeah. So MacGruber got there first, but it was still very funny.
It's still great. And in spectacular fashion do they die.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of fun death scenes going on there. All it really needed was Will Forte running around going, no, 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 no. But, yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So, yeah, they make a big deal about assembling the X-Force in this movie, right? And that's in all the trailers and stuff like that. Like it seems like the plot of this movie is about assembling the X-Force, but it's not because they die in 5 minutes.
It might not even be 5 minutes.
Like... Yeah, the only one that survives is Domino because she has luck powers and she can just, like, jump around and, like, land on a gigantic teddy bear or whatever and be fine.
And just be fine.
Which is great. I think, you know, her... Like, honestly, my favorite sequence in the movie is probably the car chase that's right after that whole thing, in which, like, Deadpool and Domino are trying to save Russell from Cable. It's a great showcase of Domino's powers, like, the way she just jumps from car to car. Has no regard for anybody who's in the other car. She is, like, people are definitely dying left and right.
Yeah.
But she's just, like, jumping through the street. She, like, jumps into the car and, like, knocks out some dudes. And, like, you know, just the way it shows off her powers and, like, she's introduced arguing with Deadpool, saying, like, your power's not very cinematic. She's like, yes, it is. And then it's like almost like proving that statement wrong, that like her power is very cinematic and it does that pretty well.
Yeah, and I really love the like subtle luck stuff. Like obviously the car crash, like the car flipping over her and landing in a perfect ramp for her to jump off of. Like that's you know, obviously like a luck thing. But like when she lands in the driver's seat or the passenger seat of the truck, the guy pulls his gun and it jams. Like that was like, and it's just a beat and no, like we just move right on. And that was such a cool way to have all that stuff happening. And yeah, I think Domino's like such a badass character for her to be in there with like up again, like as a foil for Deadpool. As a compliment to his insanity. Like it's great.
Yes. Yeah. And Zazie Beetz, I mean, she's been on Atlanta for the last two seasons. She's great in that show. So I was excited to see her get this like bigger role. Actually, everybody in Atlanta is like moving on to big things now. Donald Glover's in Solo. Lakeith Stanfield has that movie Sorry to Bother You coming out this year. Brian Tyree Henry, I think, is in that Hotel Artemis movie that's coming out, I want to say. Which, did you see the trailer for Hotel Artemis, by the way, when you saw Deadpool 2?
I did. That looks bonkers, and I want
it
to
looks,
see it.
It looks fucking amazing. It looks, I mean, look, it, I don't know how they're not getting sued by the guys who made John Wick, but... But it looks awesome. Like just the cast alone, like I need to see that movie. Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about some of the cameos in this movie, Mike, that pop up. I think the big one that people were talking about is Brad Pitt cameoing for 2 seconds as Vanisher, which was one of the funniest gags in the movie, actually, during that X-Force. Vanisher is one of the X-Force recruits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that first scene when they're doing the assembly thing, like, now here's Vanisher, and nobody's there, and it's like, he might be running late, and that kind of thing. But I think one of my favorite gags in the movie is when they all jump out of the plane, and you see just, like, one parachute with nobody attached to it, just, like, going down, and, like going by itself and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty funny. But then when Vanisher dies during that sequence, he gets electrocuted on a power line, and Brad Pitt like pops up for like a split second as Vanisher and then dies.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really liked the twist on that, because I thought that was just going to be like a one-off gag, and they pin the empty headshot to the wall as him being a member of the team.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's going to be a joke that like we never see him again until he's needed. Or something like that. But the twist is, like, nope, he dies horrifically with the rest of the team, and it's Brad Pitt. That was awesome.
It is Brad Pitt. Yeah, that was pretty great. Apparently, Brad Pitt was one of the guys who was in talks to play Cable, actually.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that didn't pan out, but, you know, I'm glad he was able to work his way into the movie somehow.
But my saddest death is Bedlam, or Terry Crews.
Yes. Yeah,
like, I love that he's cast in this, like... Because it's total misdirect that, you know, well, obviously I didn't expect them to die this way. But I loved that was like, you know, especially with him being one of them, I was like, oh, this is going to be the team and this is going to be awesome. Forget how he dies. Oh, he gets hit by a bus, I think, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, Terry Crews obviously was a big one. Also, Bill Skarsgård was one of them, too. The guy who played Pennywise in It. Was there, and Louis Tan, I think, was with the other guy. He was in the Iron Fist TV show. But I mean, everybody's favorite was Peter, Rob Delaney, his character in this movie, who was just a guy.
Just saw the ad.
Just saw the ad and decided to join the X-Force. And that was a hilarious gag, and Deadpool was like, you're in. And that's actually, you know, that was in the trailer, and it was pretty funny. But it's a lot funnier in the movie because it adds on to the Dopinder arc that's going on. Where, you know, Dopinder, the taxi driver from the first movie, is like part of Deadpool's team now. But he wants to be a superhero, and Deadpool won't let him.
He wants to be a stone cold assassin.
Yes. And so, Dopinder's in the background of the shot when Peter's like talking about, like, hey, I want to be on the team. And Deadpool's like, you're in. And Dopinder like throw his mop to the ground like shit and runs away. It was very funny. But yeah, and then Peter dies and it's very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he does bring Peter back to life at the end of the movie, Mike.
Yeah. Cleans up the timelines. Yeah, which is my favorite thing of all time.
Yeah, so I mean this post credit scene, I had seen a lot of people hyping up this post credit scene before I saw the movie, like people calling it like the greatest post credit scene ever and stuff like that. I might go that far. It's very funny. It's basically the post-credit scene is Deadpool has Negasonic Teenage Warhead reassemble Cable's time-traveling device, and then Deadpool goes back and corrects the timelines. So he stops Vanessa from dying, which, by the way, that happens. We should talk about that in a bit.
Oh, yeah.
He stops Vanessa from dying, and then he saves Peter. He doesn't save anybody else in the X-Force. He just saves Peter, which was pretty great. And then he goes back in time to X-Men Origins Wolverine and kills the silent Deadpool from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty funny. And then he goes back in time and kills Ryan Reynolds as himself reading the script for Green Lantern.
Yeah.
which was pretty funny. I'm not sure how many more jokes I can take about X-Men Origins Wolverine and Green Lantern. I feel like we've played those out.
I feel like, you know, this might be the, like, him finally, like, he kills them, both of them.
That has to be the capper. Because it's so weird to me that, you know, X-Men Origins Wolverine came out 9 years ago, and it was bad. It was a bad movie. I remember walking out of the movie being really upset about it. But, like, I'm not upset about it anymore. It's been 9 years. You know? But, like, Deadpool...
You've moved on.
I've moved on, but it doesn't seem like Ryan Reynolds has, you know? He's been making jokes, but he's been annihilating that movie and Green Lantern in these Deadpool movies. And it's like, all right, man, you can relax.
Yeah, clearly you got something to get, like, to get off your chest.
Like you're Deadpool now. You found success. You're good now.
You did it.
But it was really funny, and like it was a good post credit sequence. But yeah, Vanessa dies, Miranda McCarran's character.
Yeah,
and that's what we were talking about before, where we were like, I'm not sure how I feel about this and how this is playing out. And I think you know, when it does kill off Vanessa at the beginning, it's I think surprising and it works as an emotional beat, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel like unnecessary almost, or it feels like you need to know where this is going in order for this to feel justified.
Yeah,
in some way.
I feel like, you know, in 2018, people are hyper aware of when a female character dies in order to motivate a male character to action, which is she's the whole reason her death is the whole reason the plot of this movie happens.
Yes.
So that was the thing I was ready to criticize this movie for. And it, especially, you know, like they sort of, you know, are poking fun at later on, like, you know, X-Men being it's like sexist to have X-Men, right? Like, and they kind of like I feel like they poke fun at that stuff, but in another way, like they sort of embrace that progressive thought process, right? So I was a little upset, like, you know, that they were going to fridge Vanessa, right? That's the TV trope term for it.
Yes.
But, you know, he brings her back and, you know, I feel like, okay, we might have had to go through that to get to where we need to, like, for where this movie ends. And it justifies it, right, I think?
I think so, especially because it does keep her as a presence throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he sees her in visions and stuff like that. Like, he almost dies and sees her and then has to go back and stuff like that. So she's not just gone immediately. I think it was much worse in Pacific Rim Uprising when Riku Kikuchi got killed off.
Yeah.
Right? Because that to me is the definition of fridging. Like, mm-hmm. where the character dies ostensibly to, like, a female character dies ostensibly to, you know, motivate the male character and stuff like that. But it's worse when it seems completely meaningless, right? Like, in Pacific Rim Uprising, she died for no reason, right? Like, there was no reason that character had to die. Yeah. And in this movie, you know, the plot is built around it. Like, it's Deadpool's entire emotional journey. And so, to me, it didn't play that poorly. Plus, yeah. I mean, it does like, lead into those opening credits, which were really, really funny.
Yeah,
you know, and the opening credits were a highlight of the first movie too. But the opening credits, I think, are funnier in this movie because they come right after, you know, they kill off Vanessa, and every opening credit is like, wait, what the fuck?
Did you just, like, kill her?
Produced by, like, what were you thinking? And, like, starring somebody who hates sharing the spotlight, obviously.
Yeah, and I love the James Bond opening credit, like, animations that are going on.
The Celine Dion song going on in the background. It was great. Also, I think, out of both movies, my favorite credit of all time has got to be directed by one of the guys who killed the dog in John Wick.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what the director credit was in the first one, but I think it was pretty funny.
I think it was, like, some overpaid asshole or something like that.
Something
along those lines. Which, yeah, that's a pretty apt way to describe a friend of the show, Tim Miller. But,
yeah, sure. Friend of the show.
But anyway, speaking of David Leitch, I think, you know, he does bring the invented action beats here that he's known for. Yeah. You know, and I think we've talked about this before. I'm like, we're living in a great world right now where, you know, Chad Stahelski and David Leitch made John Wick. And Chad Stahelski is holding down the fort with these John Wick movies, mm-hmm. While David Leitch has moved on to just make other blockbusters better. Like, that's...
Yeah.
So we're still getting kick-ass John Wick movies, but we're also, like, elevating other movies at the same time. It's mm-hmm. pretty cool. And so David Leitch, you know, co-directed John Wick, did Atomic Blonde, now he's doing this. He's also doing the Rockin' Statham spinoff of the Fast and Furious movies,
right?
Which I can't wait for that. But, you know, and he brings the inventive action here. There's one beat which I really loved with the Deadpool using his arm as a noose around Cable's neck during a prison fight, which is just like it's such a gross move. but it's the kind of action beat that, like, it seems like David Leitch thinks up, right? He has, like, the specific choreography that goes on in these movies. In his movies specifically, I think he brings that here. And, you know, there's bits like a gun going through Deadpool's hand, and I'm not talking a bullet, I mean the actual gun goes through Deadpool's hand and stuff like that. It makes the action much more exciting to me on a visceral level.
Yeah And I think that the set piece on the car chase and, like, the fight on the prison truck is awesome. It's really a sight to behold, the insane fighting. And I think Josh Brolin and Ryan Reynolds fighting together just looks fucking dope. And especially with David Leitch's choreography and stuff. So I think that was really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I would say I feel like the CGI was a little wonky at times. You know, I think especially towards the end with the Colossus and Juggernaut fight, I was like, all right, this is a... Although they referenced that, like, they mentioned that in the movie, so it's...
You can sort of forgive it, right? Deadpool looks at the camera and is like, big CGI fight coming up, and runs away, and then they fight.
Yeah, I get it. I know that he says it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, just because you say it doesn't mean it's okay. You know?
Just because you acknowledge that it's not that great? Yeah. But I mean, Juggernaut, though.
Yes. When it was first revealed that Juggernaut came out, I freaked out.
Yeah.
I love Juggernaut. I am a big Juggernaut fan. I loved seeing him in this movie. kind of disappointed they didn't do more with him. I feel like he's just kind of like a big, like, brute antagonist type thing.
Yeah.
Also, just a little bummed out they didn't get Vinnie Jones, because he was Juggernaut in X-Men 3.
Right.
And it would have been really cool if, like, they got him to come back for it. Apparently, it's Ryan Reynolds doing the voice of Juggernaut. Like, it's just, they deepened it.
Oh, okay.
But still, like, just the reveal that it is Juggernaut, like, when he comes out of the cage and, like, it pans up and you see, like, the helmet and you're like, oh my god, it's Juggernaut! Like, I freaked out. I was really excited about that.
Yeah, and I sort of appreciate that Deadpool does too, right? Like, he's like, oh my god, I've been a huge fan of you since he names the comic book issues that he's been in and stuff. Like,
yeah, I was. That's what I was doing. Like, I was.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But yeah, other stuff you want to talk about? I mean, there's the big final sequence in which Cable goes back in time to save Deadpool's life, Mike, which is, you know, very heartfelt, very emotional and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, that was fun. I liked the bit there when he's dying, but he keeps fake out dying.
Yes.
Just because it's, like, clearly making fun of Logan, which they do in the very beginning. Like,
they start off making fun of Logan dying and Logan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny, the opening sequence where Deadpool's like, first he rides our coattails with an R rating, like all this stuff. But yeah, I thought that bit where he won't die was pretty funny. And that stuff is pretty, that sequence, that, like, big shootout or battle at the home for mutants, or what, reform home or whatever, was intense. It was cool. I was into it. I felt for Firefist and his emotional journey through this movie.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think, Julian Dennison as Firefist, I loved him. I mean, have you seen Home for the Wild People, Mike?
No, I haven't seen it yet, and you've been hyping it up for so much,
dude,
for so long.
He is so great in that movie, and so I was excited to see him. And he's basically playing the same character in this movie, so I was pretty psyched about that. I mean, there's no mutant powers in Hunt for the Little People, but still.
Right.
But yeah, so he's great, and, you know, his journey is like this, you know, misunderstood kid who has these, like, destructive powers he doesn't know how to control. It actually kind of reminded me of Ezra Miller's character in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
If you remember that at all. I mean, that's I think this movie handles that a lot better than that movie, but you know, it kind of hits the same beats of, like, this kid with these powers who doesn't know what to do with, living in this home that's abusing him and, like, trying to get rid of those powers and stuff like that. So I think that was a kind of interesting parallel to draw. There's a couple other cameos I wanted to bring up. One that I had no idea was him, actually. But when Cable first shows up, when he first travels back in time, he finds these two redneck dudes who are just talking about going to the bathroom or whatever. Like, they're just having a conversation about pooping.
Yeah.
The two rednecks are Alan Tudyk and Matt Damon.
I thought that was Alan Tudyk. I didn't recognize Matt Damon, though. Holy shit.
Yeah, I had no idea it was either one, actually. Like, I guess I wasn't looking for it. And, like, Alan Tudyk, I feel like I should have gotten. I was upset at myself for not realizing that was him.
Yeah,
but Matt Damon was under, like, heavy prosthetics.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think Alan Tudyk's only in profile, though. Like, I don't think he ever, like, looks at, like, faces the camera head on.
Okay, so, but Alan Tudyk, I think, is the one who's talking, though.
Maybe, I don't remember.
But, anyway, yeah, Matt Damon, though, is the weirder one. That's, like...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, which is funny, because he also had a weird cameo in Thor Ragnarok.
Right. I feel like that might have been why he's in this.
Maybe.
Why he gets that.
It might be. But, yeah, he, apparently he's, you know, under heavy prosthetics, he deepened his voice, and he's credited as one of his personalities from The Talented Mr. Ripley instead of Matt Damon. Matt Damon.
Oh my god.
Which is pretty great. Cool. But there's also an X-Men cameo in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the funniest beats in the movie, where Deadpool is walking around the X-Mansion and he's talking to classes and, like, and why when I show up are you two the only ones who are here? Like, I don't get it. Where are the other X-Men? Like, Fox can't spring for, you know, another additional X-Man to show up. And while he's walking around, you see like an open room with the entire cast of, like, X-Men Dark Phoenix. Like, it's like James McAvoy and Nicholas Holt and all of them. And Beast is just like closes the door really quickly, like before Deadpool can see them.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was actually them, because James McAvoy is the only one whose face I saw, like, in that, you know, the split second they're on screen.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really great that they got that they got the whole cast to be there for a second.
Yeah, I think what happened, because X-Men Dark Phoenix was filming at the same time, so they were able to just, like, get a quick shot of them on set and, you know, make that happen. But, yeah, so that happened, and that was pretty funny. Because I was wondering, like, are there going to be, like, I heard there was cameos in this movie and stuff like that. I was wondering if they would get any X-Men going on. And so that was probably the perfect usage of the X-Men of these movies. Like, I don't see how any of those characters can exist in the R-rated world that Deadpool has created. But it also does mess me up a lot, because... You know, these Deadpool movies take place in present day, right?
Right.
Right.
But that version of the X-Men cast should be the 90s version, right? Or whatever. Like,
yeah, it should be Patrick Dark Stewart Phoenix is
No, Dark Phoenix is supposed to take place in the 90s. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if this takes place in present day, it should be Patrick Stewart and Halle Berry and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But even if it wasn't them, like, all those other movies, like the First Class is in the 60s, Days of Future Past in the 70s, Apocalypse is in the 80s, and we talked about how that makes no sense by itself. But now... you see this quick glimpse of the X-Men cast, presumably the 90s version, because they're going to be the ones in Dark Phoenix. Right. But still, so why are they in this Deadpool 2, in this present day situation? It makes no sense, Mike.
I don't know. Their timelines never made sense, which they made fun of in the first Deadpool.
Yes, the X-Men timeline is completely fucked. But yeah, there's that. So there's the X-Men credits. Otherwise, any other stuff you want to talk about, Mike, or should we wrap this up?
No, I think we covered everything there is to talk about, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both had fun with the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it very much. I liked it a lot more than the first one. I think David Leitch brings a lot to this movie that, you know, Tim Miller, you're like, sure, he was fine.
I thought of another scene, though.
Okay.
The Basic Instinct reference.
Oh. Baby Legs Deadpool?
Baby Legs Deadpool. so dumb, but, like, still hilarious. Like, I don't understand why so much of this is so funny.
Yes, that was pretty funny. Actually, I mean, that happens because Juggernaut literally rips Deadpool in half when right. he first sees him, which was pretty great. But then, yeah, so there's just an elaborate... That goes on for so long, the Baby Legs Deadpool scene.
It really does, yeah.
You know, and it's it is pretty funny. It is enjoyable to watch. Cable's reaction to it is pretty great. And that's, I think, part of what I love about Josh Brolin in this character is he's reacting to the absolute ridiculousness of Deadpool with the most disgust of yeah. of anyone.
Yeah,
which is pretty great. Oh, and actually, when they're talking about Cable and you know, Deadpool's like, I want to fuck Cable up, I want to kill him and stuff like that. And then as soon as he finishes, like, he's behind you, isn't he? And because he's staring right at him.
Yeah.
And he's behind TJ Miller and Domino and stuff like that. But yeah, otherwise, other stuff, Mike, or should we wrap it up?
No, that was all. That was all.
Okay. Just wanted to bring up Baby Legs Deadpool. Yeah. Had a lot of fun with Deadpool 2. Very much looking forward to whatever happens next. I am really curious to see what happens if this Disney deal goes through. You know what I mean? I think Deadpool is too successful at this point to not make more movies out of. Like, the demand is there for people for Deadpool movies. And I think there's these plans in place for this X-Force movie and stuff like that. But at the same time, I don't think Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios really wants much to do with that side of the universe, like with the Deadpool stuff anyway, with the R-rated things.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would look forward to an X-Force movie with Deadpool, Cable, Colossus, Teenage Mutant Ninja, whatever. No.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which also is a recurring bit that he can't remember her name.
Right.
Yeah, and Fire Fist and Yukio, right? Like, that X-Force is awesome.
Yeah. And Domino.
And Domino. I would love to see that movie.
Yes, yeah. And once again, I think my funniest moment is probably just, bye, Yukio.
Bye, Wade. That's it.
I don't know why that started. Like, it's just such a weird bit, but I thought that was the funniest bit in the whole movie, honestly. That was pretty great. Anyway, I think we can wrap up for today, Mike.
Yes.
Where can we find you online this week?
You could find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
And you can find me at M Smith Film Blog on Twitter. And you can find our podcast and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to Filmbookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Feedback, compliments, top discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next episode of Filmbookcast, where I think we'll be talking Solo, A Star Wars Story. And yeah, we'll see how that goes. I don't know. I on the one hand, it's a Star War, so I'll see it, and I may enjoy it on the level of it being a Star War.
Right.
But on the other hand, I don't know. I like young Han Solo, and like that's not an idea that I ever felt like I needed, and the production problems for this movie and behind the scenes. I don't know. I'm a little worried, Mike. A little worried about Solo.
Yeah, I don't think I ever foresaw a future where I wouldn't be, like, beyond hyped for a Star Wars movie, but here we are. So we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. You can check out our next Complete Works, where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2011's Season of the Witch. So That one's probably not going to be great either. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We are out.
Heroes should not kill in time like Deadpool.
My kill count is really intimidating.
They killed that guy, that Deadpool.
Off his balls, cut off his mouth.
Hey, sexy friends, won't you please help me out?
First one, who killed Deadpool gets to win the Deadpool.
If Spider-Man were here, that'd be really cool.
You're lucky I was passing through here.
Yay! Your tights do great things for your arse.
Hey, you're no slouch in that way either.
Thanks, voice. But every last inch of me's covered in scars. Oh, shit! Motherfucker!